getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live, TSN1290.ca. Good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A happy Victoria Day long weekend to you and yours, wherever you may be listening. If you've braved the weather, or at least the weather that's supposed to be arriving, and headed out to the lake, we welcome you from out there. If you're staying in the city, we welcome you back here in Winnipeg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. 3 hours of hockey talk for you. A very busy day. Sort of surprising for a mid-May day, but a very busy day in the hockey world. And we'll get right into it by starting with the IIHF, the semifinals, the two games you heard this morning and this afternoon here on TSN 1290. Team Canada, they eliminated the Czech Republic, the hometown Czech Republic team, by a 2-0 margin. And then in a game that was actually much closer than the score indicated, Team Russia, with the freshly arrived Alex Ovechkin, defeats the United States of America by a 4-0 margin, meaning we have Canada versus Russia tomorrow in the gold medal game, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. And then in the bronze medal game, of interest to Winnipeg Jets fans, of course, we have the battle of the Winnipeg Jets goaltenders, perhaps future and present, Andre Pavlik versus Connor Hellebuyck. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Richie, Ezzy, it's a pleasure to see you both, as I've been away for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's good to have you back, Drew.
Thank you.
It's funny how a couple of weeks seem to really feel like a longer time, but glad to have you back. Richie and I are both glad to have you back. We're all glad to have you back at the station. It was a great show last week at Canadiens Polo Park for the Hockey Manitoba 100th anniversary. Richie did a great job filling in for you as host. You know, to me, you guys know, I think I'm a bigger fan of the World Hockey Championship than you guys are. But this year especially, it's been a fantastic tournament. And Connor Hellebuyck has really been the story. And I realize we're going to get into, you know, the game, break it down a little bit here. But that's a good Russian team. And they added Alexander Ovechkin to an already really strong Russian team. But he's been terrific. And Andre Pavlik, too, he got player of the tournament today, which is incredible. But, yeah, it's been a great tournament. I mean, what I love about this tournament, Richie, is some of the players that don't get to head to the playoffs kind of get to shine in this tournament. And you saw a perfect example of it today. Mike Smith gets the shutout. He had an awful year.
Yeah.
And I really like Mike Smith. He had an awful year, gets the shutout. Jason Spezza is leading Canada in points. He had a rough year on Dallas.
True.
They didn't make the playoffs. Taylor Hall, he didn't have a very fun year in Edmonton. So you're starting to see a lot of players who didn't have playoff success or didn't even get to the playoffs have success in this tournament. And it's really, really high-quality hockey. And this is the final everybody wants to see, right? Canada hasn't won this tournament, what is it, since 2009?
It's been a long time.
Or
2007, right. Yeah, sorry.
They haven't even won a medal and gone out of the quarterfinals in the last number of years before this year. But, I mean, this is a different Team Canada, I think, than we've seen in the last few years. This is a stacked team.
Well, they have Sidney Crosby for starters and Claude Giroux, which they usually don't have, right?
So that's right. I mean,
Ron McLean said their payroll today was $96 million.
Yeah, somewhere in the $90 million range. Sochi Olympics dominance, but I watched the majority of that game today, and the Czechs, you talk about Mike Smith and how he's had a rough year. The Czechs didn't have very many opportunities throughout the course of the game. This was a game dominated by Team Canada.
Lines are so stacked, Drew. I mean, you have one line with Crosby and Eberle and Hall, and then you got Sagan and you got Spezza, and I mean, go on and on and on. O'Reilly, I mean, you have
McKinnon.
Yeah. So, I mean, and Brent Burns, the offensive defense when they had Tyson Berry, guys like that moved the puck real good for that kind of a game. And Mike Smith, as you mentioned, played solid when he needed to and kind of played that, that style of play of the top netminders in the NHL who don't get challenged often, at times, whether it be Ben Bishop, we'll talk about later, of course, or somebody else like that.
And Richie, this tournament, let's make no mistake, this tournament isn't as important as the Olympics, but Hockey Canada puts a lot of stake into this tournament. They want to win this tournament. They've got a history of winning this tournament. We talked to Andy Murray last week. He coached Canada to 3 gold medals in the late 90s there. I mean, Hockey Canada wants to win this tournament. Zinger's involved with Hockey Canada at the World Championships. So, I mean, you know, Kenny Holland and Mike Babcock are there. I mean, this is a big deal. It's a bigger deal in the European countries. It's definitely a bigger deal for Russia and Czech Republic. But Hockey Canada wants to win this tournament. And that's why I think a lot of players decide to go over and play there. I know, you know, they could have had Drew Doughty and they could have had Jeff Carter. Those guys have played a lot of hockey for the LA Kings, but that's why I think players like Nathan MacKinnon and all these other players, they also want to show Hockey Canada that they want to put the jersey on they want to play in 2018. Because especially if you're one of those borderline guys, like if you're like a Tyler Toffoli, I'm not saying that, you know, he has a great chance, but a really good player who's maybe has a small chance of making an Olympic team.
Yeah.
They want to go there and, you know, show the coaching staff, show the management staff that, you know, they want to perform for their country. Well, so
a lesson, like, I mean, you mentioned Claude Giroux being over there. In past, he's maybe not been so quick to answer the bell for Team Canada, and there was some speculation that may have hurt him in when it comes to previous international consideration.
Yeah, Claude Giroux is actually a better example. That's a good point you raised, because we know Claude Giroux didn't show up to the training camp and all of that. So Claude Giroux has a better chance of making the Olympic team probably than Tyler Toffoli. I'm a huge fan of Tyler Toffoli.
He just likes saying his name.
Yeah. No, he's a great player, and he had a rough year towards the end, especially for LA. But, no, it's been a great tournament. And I think, you know, again, I know Richie's going to get on me here, but the way Connor Hellebuyck has played, You got to think it's going to be tough not to give him. I'm not saying that he's going to be in the starting lineup for the Jets next year, because he'll be the starting goalie for the Moose again next year, but it's going to be tough to keep him out of the NHL for very long, because this guy, I mean, he's been the story of the tournament. Andrei Pavlik's played well, and if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger, you're just loving this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So. But he's been terrific. I mean, his numbers speak for themselves, right? Maybe you can run them off here, Drew, but I mean, his goals against average and save percentage in this tournament has been incredible.
Well, Connor Hellebuyck, I think this is entering into... No, this is now following the game against the Russians today. So where he didn't have his success. It was a 0-0 game after 40 minutes, though.
Yep.
9 games played. His save percentage is .936, and his goals against average is 1.56.
It's incredible. I mean, he's 21 years old.
Yeah. And he wasn't expected to necessarily be the starter for the United States in this tournament. They thought it would probably be Jack Campbell getting the majority of the minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Connor Hellebuyck, and same with Pavlik. I mean, Pavlik actually for the Czech Republic apparently wasn't the starter either. It was, what's his name? I think Salak, right? Isn't that the goaltender for the Czech Republic? Alexander Salak was supposed to be the starting goaltender for the Czech Republic. He got shelled for, I think, something like 7 goals against in the first 30 shots he faced tournament.
And Pavlik has proven himself at the international level as well. He's been good at this tournament. He was good at the World Juniors. So, well, and he finished the regular season very strong, you know, didn't have the best playoffs against the Anaheim Ducks. But it's tough to not go with Pavlik, especially when Salak was struggling earlier in the tournament. Right?
Yeah, I think I obviously know Ezzie's answer into whether or not you can read anything into the performances of Hellebuyck and Pavlik. Richie, do you think it's just, you know, a good performance, you know, on an international stage and nothing more that you can sort of extrapolate out of it?
Well, I mean, you get confidence from it, Drew. It's not a bad thing. I mean, he's going to go over there. He's played well. For sure, he's played well, and he's going to get confidence from it. And, you know, the fact that he played really well in the AHL year also gives you confidence if you're the organization. But you have to remember who he's playing against. I mean, they didn't play against Canada, right?
Well, I mean, you're right. Hellebuyck didn't. Pavlik did. He only gave up 2 goals today.
Okay, well, I'm speaking about Hellebuyck
right
now.
Okay, that's fine.
I mean, Hellebuyck didn't play against Canada. So, I mean, the other teams that they're facing, you know, some of them have a lot of NHL players. Some of them are lacking real NHL talent and are playing a similar level of talent to what he played in the AHL, probably with a better team in front of him as compared to his opposition. So I would be happy about it if I was a fan. It would give me confidence in the goaltending situation going forward, maybe a little bit more than I had before, but not too much more.
Because you were probably already pretty high.
Yeah,
on
I mean, he had a great
prospects.
Year, right? He had a great year. So, and in terms of Pavlik, well, I mean, he ended the season, some people say not well, based on the decks. I would say I have no issue with the way he ended the season as, you know, within the picture of where I think he is in general. And as he said, he's shown flashes before, and you know, it's another good performance. It only gives him confidence. So again, if this gives him confidence, you're the Jets, you're happy with both players' performances. I don't think it's going to, you know, it doesn't mean that much, but it doesn't mean nothing.
Yeah, I'm not reading too much into it, guys. I think that you just look at the trajectory his career is taking, right? And everything is, it's kind of similar to John Gibson, really. in Anaheim, and how John Gibson really fought his way into the lineup, right? Because Jonas Hiller was there, and Frederik Andersen was there, and obviously Frederik Andersen has outplayed John Gibson. John Gibson had that injury earlier in the season.
Sure.
But it's going to be tough to keep him out of the lineup, not so much next year, but in the coming years, to at least give him a taste of the NHL, Richie, because he's a fantastic talent. And Richie's right. I mean, you know, they beat Switzerland in the quarterfinals and
by Denmark before that.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't playing the 1972 Russians here. Mm-hmm. But you can't take away from those numbers and how he played on a very young American team. Jack Eichel, Dylan Larkin. I mean, this was a very young American team, a really fun team to watch, actually. But you know, considering that he's got a pretty young team in front of him, it's really impressive. And again, if you're a Jets fan, if you're the Jets management, you're so happy with the amount of quality goaltending talent. And that's not to mention Jamie Phillips and Eric Comrie. And I mean, the Jets have a serious amount of depth in goal, which is great.
Yeah, certainly it certainly is. So
I mean, the one problem with that, Ezzy, there's never a problem with it, but the one issue with it in terms of, you know, team building is goalies don't get you a ton on the market, and you can only play one at a time.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's great to have.
It can be a problem, Richie. If
it's a good problem to have.
There's only one net, right?
Yeah.
So you can't have two goalies in the net at once, and yeah. So at a certain point, that's going to be the decision's ultimately going to come down to Pavlik and Hellebuck, because Hutchinson's younger and Pavlik makes more money, and his next contract he's going to command more money. So at a certain point, when Pavlik's contract is up, they're going to have to make a decision. And again, if Hellebuck
Pavlik's still here, though, you know, who knows, right?
Right.
Yeah.
About tomorrow afternoon's gold medal game. I mean, it's Canada, Russia. I know that, you know,
Well, it's Crosby, Ovechkin, so that's a big storyline.
Yeah. So, like, this will gather your attention when other games in this tournament wouldn't necessarily capture your attention.
Well, there's no NHL on, Richie, so.
Well, there is. They'll be going head-to-head tomorrow.
Oh, I thought it was at night.
No, the Western Conference Final and the gold medal game will be going head-to-head tomorrow.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well.
See, that was, I mean, let's be honest, guys. I mean, the game should have been at night here.
Well, let's talk about the NHL.
Were they going up against the NBA? I mean,
give me
no,
a second.
The NBA is on. They're going up against the NBA tomorrow afternoon. There's no NBA today.
So give me a second.
What's the reason?
Well,
does anybody know? Really?
Yeah,
I don't know.
The reason is they want to use the NHL as a lead-in to the Preakness, which is going on NBC right now. And, of course, Canadian hockey fans don't matter. Which
okay, are you kidding
Canadian
me?
Hockey fans don't matter, which is true based upon the selection of times here for these games. And the fact that Hockey Night in Canada and Saturday night's a tradition in Canada. So let's just make sure we understand. So how much is the American TV deal for again? $200 million a
yeah.
year, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Which is great after he gave it away for free. Gary Bettman, the genius, gave it away for free. So $200 million a year, okay? Then you have the Canadian TV deal, which is what?
$500 million.
$500 million a year?
Yeah.
So generally speaking, the NHL follows the money. But not in this situation, not when the U.S. and the big TV companies and the U.S. pressure, we have to have the game in the afternoon. Both games in the afternoon. What time is tomorrow's game at?
Tomorrow's game is at 2 o'clock Central Time, 12. It'll be a 12 noon start.
In Anaheim.
It's unfortunate because it's a long weekend. Right?
Damn, it's the middle of the day. It's 22 degrees outside.
People want to watch hockey at night on a May-long weekend. I mean, come on.
I agree with you.
No, I want to stay inside. Why does anybody in Anaheim want to go to the beach tomorrow afternoon at noon? No. We're going to stay inside. We're going to watch hockey.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Winnipeg Jets and their contract negotiations with Michael Frolik. They're supposedly not going well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Vegas.com.
When are they going to start having afternoon games on Tuesdays and Wednesdays?
Well, in Vegas. When the games are in Vegas, they'll have to do that, because that's when the shift workers will be able to make to the majority of the games. What a absolute disaster. The thing I don't understand, and I don't want to talk about the scheduling for much longer than this. I understand you wanting to use one program as a lead-in to another program. Why can't you use the Preakness as a lead-in to the hockey game right after?
Also, if you're a hockey fan, don't you want to have the opportunity to watch both those games tomorrow?
That's the thing, Rich.
I know Gary Bettman and the IHF don't get along, but like, can you? I know Bettman may not be the one directly making the call. Don't get me wrong, but the idea is like, don't you want to open communication lines and be like, oh, okay, well, we don't want to go against you because we're going to hurt our ratings. We're both going to hurt each other's ratings.
Like, Rich,
I know there's a big corporate battle there, but
if you would have asked your average hockey fan, what would be the ideal times and what would be the worst possible times to schedule games
right.
1 and 2, by the way, of two conference finals that are going to be excellent.
I
mean, if you
that.
Watched the game earlier this afternoon.
Which we'll talk about next segment, for sure.
It was incredible. I mean, yes. Of course, it was another 2-1 game because the Rangers only play 2-1 games. But again, I know we don't want to spend too much time on it. We want to focus on the positives and not the negatives. But it's something that hopefully they look at next year. And again, it's unfortunate that you have to revolve TV programming around. And I know, Laura's from Kentucky, by the way. We're spoiled here. Laura made us chocolate chip cookies, and I'm about to have one here. So thank you to Laura if you're listening.
Yes, Laura in this instance is my wife.
Right. Yeah. And, we've been to Kentucky. We went to see a nice race at Keeneland.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, come on. Hockey and horse racing, shouldn't have to.
I'm sure the horse racing outdraws.
Shouldn't have to compete.
The horse racing outdraws the NHL. But I don't think that there's any connection between the two audiences necessarily.
Exactly.
If you're going to watch hockey in the United States, you're going to watch it if it's on at 7 o'clock or if it's on at 12 noon.
Yep.
If you're going to watch horse racing, you're going to watch it at whatever time that's on as well. Mm-hmm. But if you want to build one of the audiences, it just makes, do the horse racing. Even if you switch it around, 2 weeks ago is the Derby, so use the NHL as a lead-in to the Derby, 2 weeks ago, and then when tonight with the Belmont, use the Belmont as the lead-in to the hockey right after.
Did they cut away, or are they going to cut away when Alfredson scored against Buffalo?
They cut away. That was what was that, 5-6 years ago?
That was a conference final. No, 2007, Ottawa played Anaheim in the final, and that was the conference final when Alfredson scored.
Against Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
a dark day
Game
for
five.
Hockey on TV.
They did. They definitely cut away. I don't even know where they showed it now that you
that
mentioned
one
it.
I can understand because they weren't paying for the rights.
That's true. The rights were free at that point in time. But, that was, I guess, when they were still on their local. I guess it was still the Outdoor Life Network that they would have been on.
I think it was an NBC game, Drew.
Oh, I know it was an NBC, but the cable partner
was
OLN or Versus or whatever it was. In any event, questionable decision-making from the NHL. And that's absolutely of no surprise. I mean, if NBC says anything to the NHL just responds with how high.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back to the Winnipeg Jets. Reports, Michael Frolik, the contract negotiations aren't going well between his agent, Alan Walsh, with Winnipeg Jets management, Kevin Cheveldayoff, et cetera.
Is that a surprise?
No, that's what my question was. Okay. Is this a surprise at all at this point in time? I'd be shocked.
Why would he sign now if he's waited this long?
That's right. If he doesn't hit July 1st, then you have an unrestricted free agency.
You're not going to wait this long unless you want to test UFA waters. Same with Mike Babcock. Same idea. You don't wait this long unless you want to see what's out there.
Right.
I mean, it's going to cost you more than it was going to cost you a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And when you didn't trade him at the deadline and you were a contending team, and I understand why you didn't, then you basically probably thought there was an 85% chance you were losing him. That's what I would have pegged the odds at.
Yeah, you guys know how I feel. And I appreciate Gary wrote the article because people want to know what's going on, right?
Sure.
He's not signed and it's a little bit different than
I don't think Gary said he was surprised.
No. And that's why we're really talking about it, because Gary wrote about it and people always ask us about it. But I said this at the beginning of the season. I didn't think Michael Frolik was going to be with the Jets past this year. And again, that's not because I know something that you guys don't know. It's because of what Richie just said. He signed a 1 year deal because he had to. He was an RFA at that point. And at this point, Rich makes a good point. He's going to ask for more money, and he's going to get more money because he can say, well, hey, LA is going to offer me. I have LA and Pittsburgh, and his
That's
agent's
right.
going to say,
yeah.
well, this team, wants me. And it's a very weak UFA pool. We've talked about that. It just isn't very strong. After you get away from some of the players like Mike Green and Martin St. Louis and Matt Bolesky and throw Drew Stafford in there, and there's others. There's some goalies, but it's not a strong free agent market.
No. Speaking of which, you talk about free agency. We will kick off our UFA of the Week segment leading into free agency starting later on in the show today. We'll start with Jeff Petrie of the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, and he had a pretty decent playoffs, Drew, and a guy like Jeff Petrie, I mean, there'll be a lot of teams that want to go after a guy like Jeff Petrie. He's got the experience in the NHL, can play on your power play. But, you know, Michael Frolik, again, it's not like, I mean, he did tail off towards the end of the season. I thought Michael Frolik in the first half of the season or in the middle part of the season was a lot stronger. He didn't have a good playoffs against Anaheim. It's just a question of can you fit him in the future under the salary cap? And I suspect that Drew Stafford's going to get a contract offer and sign with the Jets. I think that he's a good fit for the Winnipeg Jets. He played really well with Mark Scheifele, especially, and Blake Wheeler on that second line. And I think when you consider that you're going to have some free agents coming up at the end of next year, and the big ones are Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien, how is he going to factor in there? Gary touched on it. Jacob Trouba's coming off of an entry-level deal, as is Mark Scheifele.
Is Adam Lowry.
How can you pay Michael Frolik $4.5 million to essentially be a third liner?
But this is not news.
No.
This has been the story all along.
Right. Yeah.
The Jets forward group is an interesting dynamic this offseason. They only have 7 forwards under NHL contract, you know, one-way NHL contract. So there's a lot of room for players, whether it be the Drew Staffords or whether it be, you know, a Nikolai Ehlers coming up from the, you know, from junior or other players along those lines. So there is a lot of room in terms of forward spots that need to be addressed either through free agency or internally as the season and as the summer progresses.
The point that Richie makes that is the most important is that it's now the middle of May, and we're in that kind of period where you don't see any signings or really much as far as everybody's watching the conference finals leading up to the Stanley Cup playoffs and quite frankly preparing for the draft really at this point.
Yeah.
And now you're not really going to see kind of you hear that Michael Frolik didn't want to sign the long-term deal, and there was an offer that was around 4 or 5 years. And so what's changed, really? Well, you know, the Jets have had some success. So, you know, maybe he wants to be a part of that, but he's probably going to make more money signing with another team on the UFA market because the Jets, I don't think, really value him as a, you know, Gary mentions $4 million a year. I'd be surprised if someone pays him $4.5 million a year.
And I think that's an overpay if somebody does. And I'm sure that the Jets are probably taking the angle. Look, it's May 16th today. You seem interested in heading to UFA. That's fine. Our best offer is X, and we will have it on the table. And it'll be on the table when July 1st comes and goes. And good luck to you if you end up with
those are usually time sensitive though, Drew, because you can't have it sitting there when you're looking
right,
at other players.
But it'll be on the table on July 1st, and maybe it'll be on the table on July 2nd. But after I don't think it's going to preclude the Jets from going out and trying to sign other free agents.
I think there's a lot of.
I bet you it's off the table by July 1st.
You think that they pull it if he hits?
You want to know where you stand on other players and want to make sure you have a direction. So.
And
you might re-engage after that, but it's not going to be an open exit.
And they're most likely, and again, I don't want to say most likely. That's not the proper use of words. I think that everything's pointing towards the Jets wanting to sign Drew Stafford. And why wouldn't you? I mean, he came over here and played very well. So they're not going to sign both of those guys.
I don't disagree with you. And I think that they probably are interested. I just don't know where we both get that impression from, aside from just sort of putting two and two together.
Because there's an article written about one, not the other. That's why. There's a reason for that.
The quiet on the Stafford front tells you that things are happening behind the scenes?
Not necessarily, but it tells me that there's better things happening.
Okay.
If nothing, it's still better than what's happening in the other one.
Richie, to answer Drew's question, I think the reason why everything is pointing towards Stafford being signed over Frolik is not only the way he played on the ice, and the way he played on the ice was incredible. I mean, Drew Stafford, I know Richie was calling for the Jets to get Drew Stafford for 4 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Played at University of North Dakota. Maybe that had a reason to do with it because Richie went to the University of North Dakota. I'm kidding. But he's a good player. He's a former first-round pick, and he's a smart player, and he was perfect for a guy like Mark Scheifele. I mean,
well, he
compare
can score,
Evander Kane playing with Mark Scheifele to Drew Stafford playing with Mark Scheifele. And the fact that he was a key piece to that contract, and I think one of the reasons why they pushed to get him in that deal was because of the fact they knew they weren't going to sign Michael Frolik. That's my own perception of the situation. I thought it was kind of insurance to go out and get a guy like Drew Stafford knowing that Michael Frolik was going to become a UFA and had no interest in signing. That's what I believe. And I think Drew Stafford's a great player. I think he's a bona fide top six guy. And that's what the Jets need. And they're going to have some young players like Nikolai Ehlers. You might see Andrew Kopp in the lineup. You've already got Scheifele and Lowry, who are young up the middle. I think Stafford, it would be almost, I think, a loss if they didn't sign him.
He fits in the room, I think, gets on a lot of the guys, Wisconsin, Minnesota ties. American players around his age can score. I think that's the biggest thing, is that he can score. And he's a natural scorer for the league. He's not a natural scorer, and I think that's probably the main reason why one will likely stay and not the other, combined with, of course, money. Because if they could afford both, I'm sure they'd express interest in both.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the course of the next probably 6 or so weeks, right before we got the draft, and then we got free agency. Ezzy and Dave, they'll be at the draft.
Yes.
Right? You guys are all down?
It's going to be very hot.
You're already sweating.
I'm
going
to have to invest in some sandals. That's going to be fun.
I'd say something else, but we'll leave that for break.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the funniest place in Winnipeg, according to us. Funniest place in Winnipeg, according to us at Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. Both shows are already sold out, as they always usually are. Jim Brewer, former Saturday Night Live cast member. Tickets are not available, but tickets for all the other shows available at rumorscomedyclub.com. This will allow me to tell the story. Of course, I was away for a couple weeks, as I'm sure you all missed me here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Yeah. Anyways, I was away for a couple of weeks, and I was down for a couple of the days in New York City, where I had the opportunity, Laura and I went to The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and we waited in line, and, you know, you have to show up. You buy tickets online, or you get tickets online. You don't have to pay for them. So you reserve tickets online, but that only doesn't really guarantee you anything. You then have to go and redeem the tickets for actual seats in the theater, because they oversell the theater. So we go a number of hours earlier, about 5 hours or so earlier to the show, to redeem our tickets, and we're waiting in line. Eventually, we get our tickets and we get into the theater, and we're talking to one of the producers, and I mentioned to him that Jon Stewart was at Rumors, and I had met him at Rumors about 25 years ago when I was a young tyke, and I mentioned to the guy, would this be a good question to ask John during the question and answer period of the just before the taping? He does about a 15-minute Q&A, and he says, "Oh, absolutely, that would be a great question to ask him." And so, you know, we're waiting in the theater, and he does his introduction, and he goes around, and he takes a question from somebody else, and then he comes, and I raise my hand, and I say, "You know, 25 years ago, you played in Winnipeg, you played at a comedy club in Winnipeg, Manitoba," and he stops me immediately, and he actually curses because he said it couldn't have possibly been 25 years ago already. But then he says, "Absolutely, I remember it. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club in Winnipeg, Manitoba." Without any prompting whatsoever, he remembered the name of the comedy club. He remembered spending 2 weeks at Rumors in winter. So, I mean, I think that'll make an indelible mark on anyone. And we had a good conversation sort of back and forth about his time in Winnipeg about 25 years ago. So that was awfully neat to be there and remember, you know, meet him sort of in person and everything else. Quite an experience being in New York.
Well, I'm gonna have to take your mic away from you, Drew, because unfortunately we're having this is live radio. Our mics stopped working. We're trying to fix this right now, but It's a great story that you just told, Drew. You know, it's actually been now two famous comedians that have mentioned rumors. Of course, Louis C.K. mentioning rumors there. And Jim Brewer, funny guy. I know he was doing the media tours earlier yesterday. Again, I guess I'll pass the mic to you because we don't have mics right now.
Because we have one working microphone at the moment, so things are going well here as usual on a Saturday afternoon. We should actually mention that, we'll talk about you guys and your interactions with Dan O'Toole last week. And apparently it was CSI, a legal curve, as you guys were trying to figure out what the unidentifiable hair was on the table when you guys were recording or were doing the show down at the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Gala. And thanks to Dan O'Toole and Jay Onright, we actually got a shout-out as well on the Jay and Dan podcast. As Ezzy, you and I, a few weeks before Dan was in town doing the Hockey Manitoba thing, Jay was in town and you and I had an opportunity to go out with him. And back then, you had a much bigger beard than you do right now. Right now, your beard is still rich and luscious, but it's not as out of control as it was when Jay met you a few weeks ago.
Right, yeah, and you know, Dan O'Toole, great on Dan O'Toole, by the way, for doing the Illegal Curve Hockey Show before the Hockey Manitoba 100th Anniversary Dinner. Again, thanks to everybody at Hockey Manitoba.
Guys, remember me?
Richie obviously doesn't have a microphone right now. We're doing a little, hey, it's impromptu, we're sharing microphones here. But no, it was really good of Dan O'Toole and very nice of them to give us a shout out there. You mentioned Jay Onright. We met with him towards the end of the regular season. Got a chance to hang out with him. He was in town doing an event, and you know, those guys are hilarious. To me, those are the funniest guys TSN SportsCenter has ever had, and I've always been a big fan of theirs, looked up to them. And you know, maybe we can get Jay Onright on, because we haven't had Jay Onright on. And Dan O'Toole again. I mean, people were coming up to me and messaging me and saying, you know, that was the best interview ever, and it was hilarious. We did a whole segment on fast food and all of that, so you know, it was incredible. And again, you know, great that they gave us a shout out, and we look forward to having those guys on again.
Richie, did we ever figure out what the unidentifiable hair actually was? I mean, was it one of your hairs? Like, I wasn't there. I didn't see the length of the hair. I couldn't describe, you know, was it sort of curly? And like, none of us really, you sort of have the curliest hair of all of us. You know, Ezzy sort of got a short buzz cut, and I wasn't there. And Dave was filling in for me, and he sort of got shorter hair as well. So, yes. You know, was it your hair perhaps?
No, well, Drew, while my hair might not be as thick as it once was, it's still longer than, you know, the short hair that was described. So I think, I don't know if we have the clip to play here. I don't know if we can get it queued up. Maybe we can queue up a few mics too. But I'm pretty sure it was Dave Manuk's hair. And Ezzy's beard is a close second. Dave, off the air after the show, kind of did take responsibility for it, but wouldn't fully take responsibility. He said, maybe that was mine, but I don't know.
Well, I can understand where Dave's coming from.
I'm comfortably close to you right now. I really don't like this.
I don't blame you, as we are all trying to huddle around one microphone as we are in the midst of a couple of technological difficulties here on the program. But nothing phases us at this point in time, right? Something like that. Anyways, Ezzy's going to slide back over here. And, you know, Eastern Conference Final, that's what we were actually supposed to be discussing during this segment. We'll talk about it a little bit as we try and get things back up and running. It was a hell of a game today. No surprise whatsoever that it was a one-goal game, because that's all the New York Rangers ever play, and no surprise whatsoever that it was a 2-1 game, because that's all the New York Rangers ever play. It was really a very up-and-down, very fast-paced, very entertaining game, I thought, today between the Rangers and the Lightning, with the Rangers obviously winning by a 2-1 margin to take a 1-0 series lead.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I thought it was an excellent game, Drew, and, you know, the New York Rangers, I'm going to go ahead and tell you who I'm picking in the series. I'm picking Tampa Bay, but I have zero confidence in that pick. I mean, I've picked against the New York Rangers before. They went to the Stanley Cup Finals, of course, last year. Picked the Washington Capitals. Hey, the Washington Capitals made a good run of it, and they could have easily been in the Eastern Conference Finals here against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But the New York Rangers, they thrive in these types of games. All they do is win close games, Drew. And, you know, Henrik Lundqvist, with the exception of Carey Price, in my opinion, is the best goaltender in the NHL. And, you know, that's no disrespect to other goalies in the NHL. He's just done it time and time again. And there's a reason why they call him the king. He deserves that title. He's got the throne right now. But, you know, a couple of players to me that have really impressed me and they've really become the playoff warriors for the New York Rangers are Chris Kreider and Derek Stepan. And you know, you saw Stepan, you know, have another really good game and factor in on the goal, Chris Kreider as well. And these two guys, you know, they're not guys that you'll see in the top 10 scoring leaders during the season, but these guys are very skilled players. Chris Kreider, to me, Chris Kreider kind of plays that Claude Lemieux type of role. Like, he's an agitator, but he backs it up, and he's a good player, and he got, obviously, the big two goals in the last game, game 6, against the Washington Capitals. But, you know, this team, they're so talented, and you saw Dan Girardi and Ryan McDonagh line up against the triplets line of Tyler Johnson, Nikita Kucherov, and Andre Palat, and they did an excellent job. And McDonagh and Girardi, these guys have been doing it for years, and they were key parts. And Mark Stahl, I mean, Mark Stahl is one of the most underrated defensemen in the NHL. Excellent. Dan Boyle coming back after, we weren't sure if he was going to play, Dan Boyle, after he was hit by Brooks Orpik. I thought he was very strong, and to me, it's going to ultimately come down to the success of that line. Because Steven Stamkos, hey, he had a great Game 7 against the Montreal Canadiens. And, you know, you got to give him credit for kind of battling through. You know, we think he's gotten an injury there. But to me, that's what it's going to come down to. And all credit to Ben Bishop. If you watch the game, I mean, Ben Bishop was excellent early on. He stopped Derek Stepan on a breakaway and made a lot of saves because the Rangers won that period. I mean, they were the better team in the first period. I'll let Richie get in here, but you know, this New York Rangers team, well-coached with Alain Vigneault and Scotty Arneal and Ulf Samuelson, they know how to play in the playoffs. They know how to get it done. As you mentioned, they win every game 2-1. And, you know, it's going to be tough to beat. I ultimately picked the Lightning because I think they have more talent up front. But when it comes to goaltending and defense, they've got the edge.
Absolutely. Richie, your thoughts on Game 1 today between the Lightning and the Rangers? You can sort of talk about the series in general if you like. As he mentioned that he thinks that the Lightning are going to win this series, he initially said pre-show in six games. I noticed he didn't mention that on there when he just said that the Lightning are going to win the series, but he's now saying he thinks it's going to be 7. Easy to make that prediction after the game, after they lose Game 1 there, as he. Richie, your thoughts on Game 1 earlier today between the Lightning and the Rangers?
Well, Drew, I think if you look at, you know, this is just a hilarious arrangement, but if you look at the teams, you know, before today's game, and I'll break down today's game, you know, from my perspective in a second, I think that I like the Rangers' D 1-6 better than I like Tampa's, even though I think Tampa's D is a good D, and I like Lundqvist better than I like Bishop. So if you're going to go, you know, Tampa Bay's forwards that much better than the Rangers? I don't think so, if at all, really. So I think that the Rangers are the better team. I have them in 7, though. I think it's going to be a close to, you know, series. I don't think that the Rangers are going to be blowing anybody out with the way that they play, especially if some of their big guns don't get going, because St. Louis, they mixed and matched some lines today, but St. Louis is not looking as effective as he did even last year.
He's sort of looking his age.
Yeah, maybe. And Rick Nash is, you know, he had a nice chance in the wraparound today, and he had, you know, 2-on-1 where Brassard had not a possibility of putting that puck over to him and didn't, although I thought that option was taken away quickly. So overall, I like the Rangers in the series, and I like them in 7. In terms of today's game, I thought the Rangers outplayed them in the first period. In the second period, they even outplayed them. In the third, Tampa pushed back and was able to draw some penalties and get momentum from their impressive power play. I thought they moved the puck real nice today. But, you know, the Rangers' cycle was pretty effective. And it's, you know, I know that the last goal that they scored, Moore, with 2.5 minutes left, was off of Moore's shin pad. But if you watch the game, one thing that I noticed is that both teams can skate. I mean, the Lightning is a real fast squad. The Rangers can skate with them. And the Rangers are bigger up front, or at least more physical, and use their body more, to my mind. And I thought that the Rangers were able to create a lot of the cycle today and create chances. And, you know, that Tampa defense isn't overly aggressive. I know Hedman can be aggressive, but Carl and Coburn, again, they want him. He's always been a guy they want to be more aggressive. Carl's a big guy who's never been that aggressive. Schuster's more aggressive, but not a great skater, and they were trying to protect him today. Strawman's, you know, an effective player, a really effective player, but not great on the boards. And I thought the Rangers were doing a real nice job of exploiting Tampa down low off the cycle. And Tampa's had troubles with big teams this year. So I think that's going to be a key to this series.
You say Rangers in 7. I echoed your Rangers in 7. Ezzy will grant you a mulligan. We'll say you say Lightning in 7 as well. In any event, it's going to be an interesting series in the Eastern Conference Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're three guys. We have one mic on TSN 1290. Quarter to four in the afternoon here on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook at bernsteinsdeli.com. I'm going to spend the next 10 or so minutes, give or take, talking about the Montreal Canadiens. They had their end-of-season press conference featuring General Manager Marc Bergevin earlier in the week. And the Montreal Canadiens are an interesting team, to my mind, in that if you look at the advanced numbers, if you take those into consideration, they're not a very good team. But then you look at their record and you look at where they finished in the Eastern Conference, and they obviously were a very good team in terms of wins and losses. And largely for that, or a large reason for that, is Carey Price. And that seems to be something that people want them to apologize for. They're only that good because they have Carey Price. Well, yeah, they have Carey Price, and he's not going anywhere. So when you are that good as they were this year, nothing to apologize for. They fell short against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they were really outplayed by the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they're sort of a tweener in that they're good enough to make the playoffs on a yearly basis. I just don't think that they're good enough, and they're not built to be a team that goes deeper. I mean, they won one round, so goes deeper into the playoffs, either into the Stanley Cup Championship, or I mean, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. So yeah, Carey Price can carry them and run them all deep into a playoff run, but it seems like people want them to apologize for having Carey Price.
Well, Drew, you mentioned that the Montreal Canadiens aren't built to go deep into the playoffs, and I agree with you. I think you mentioned the advanced stats numbers, and we know that you can only take those advanced stats numbers with a grain of salt, because
take all stats,
right? You can't say that advanced stats predetermine anything, but the advanced stats were right in this case. And to me, what was really exemplified in the Tampa Bay series is that when the Montreal Canadiens needed someone to step up with the goal, and we always knew that it was Max Pacioretty was the guy that, he's got back-to-back 30-goal seasons. If it wasn't Max Pacioretty, and, I thought Brendan Gallagher was excellent. You guys know I'm a big Brendan Gallagher fan. But to me, you look at how Alex Galchenyuk played. You look how, to me, Thomas Plekanec really, I don't know if there was something bothering him at this time of the year. He could have been dealing with a minor injury. But Thomas Plekanec, to me, it can be a force at both ends of the ice. And to me, he didn't have a good playoffs. He wasn't very good against Ottawa. But, back to kind of the makeup of this team, Drew, Jeff Petrie, we talked about him. He's a guy that the Montreal Canadiens might sign. To me, this Montreal Canadiens team at times looked slow. And P.K. Subban, I thought, he was good at times. He maybe wasn't as dominant as he was last year when the Montreal Canadiens went to the conference finals. But to me, this team needs to retool. They need to bring in some players via free agency. And, we saw them go after Thomas Vanek last year. That didn't work. They need a player that brings it on both ends of the ice. But, this is still a team to me that can be successful. They're by no means a rebuilding team.
No, they're definitely not a rebuilding team, but they're small. And in this day and age in the NHL, you can have some small players and be successful. But, you also need some, the Tampa Bay Lightning aren't a big team, but they have Steven Stamkos. And they have Tyler Johnson, who are arguably two of the top 10 forwards in the NHL. I mean, Stamkos is certainly probably a top two goal scorer. Tyler Johnson, for being undrafted and being as small as he is, certainly turned into a top 20 forward at worst. The Montreal Canadiens don't have that forward. They have Carey Price, who's the best goaltender in the league and going to be the MVP of the season in the NHL probably. And they have P.K. Subban, who's a top three, top five defenseman. But they don't have the scoring power up front to sort of make up for the size deficiency that they have when it comes to their forward group.
Yeah, and really, Drew, that's been a problem for this team now for quite some time. And that was one of the reasons why they went out and got a guy like Devontae Smith-Pelly, for example, right? They traded Jurij Sekáč to the Anaheim Ducks, who, by the way, hasn't played at all for the Anaheim Ducks because they've got so much depth. But Devontae Smith-Pelly, he's not 6'5", but he's a guy, he's 6 feet. He's a guy that can mix it up. He's a physical forward. So they've tried to address those issues. But to me, it comes back to, is Thomas Plekanec the guy up the middle? Like, you know, you mentioned they're small, but you look at the Anaheim Ducks with Ryan Kesler and Ryan Getzlaff, and you look at the Chicago Blackhawks with Jonathan Toews and, you know, Brad Richards and others, but they've also got some of the most skilled forwards in the league. But you look at them up the middle, L.A. with Jeff Carter, Anze Kopitar. That is more to the point of, is this team built? The question is this team just a good regular season team? And is Carey Price, you know, able to consistently get them in the playoffs, and they're consistently competitive, and then when it comes down to the playoffs, they buckle. And to me, that's what this team is becoming. And the makeup of this team, Mark Bergevin has to do more than he did this past offseason, I believe. And it starts with addressing more of the lack of scoring, especially secondary scoring. I mean, for example, Drew, Torrey Mitchell, 5 points, was fourth on the team in points. Torrey Mitchell got the majority of those points early in the Ottawa series. Nobody was scoring for this team. And, you know, we talked about Galchenyuk. Lars Eller wasn't very good. Plekanec wasn't. You can go up and down the list. They just weren't getting goals from players that weren't Gallagher and Pacioretty, and they need to address that.
Yeah, I would agree with everything you said. You look at them up the middle, especially. I think that's where your size deficiency really is best exemplified. I mean, you got Plekanec and Desharnais as your 1-2 centermen, neither of which is 6 feet tall, and they're both sub 200. And sure, the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, were a bad matchup for them, and you sort of suspected they might be, given how the Habs played against them in the course of the regular season. But, you know, Mark Bergevin, in the course of his season-ending press conference and his availability, talks about how hard it is to trade for a big centerman. It really is. Nobody's giving them up, unless you're giving up, I don't know, you're giving up Carey Price or P.K. Subban, and they're obviously not going to do that. So I don't know. Look, the Montreal Canadiens are a very good regular season team, and in the last 2 years they've got to the conference finals where they didn't have Carey Price, so arguably they could have been the Eastern Conference representative 2 years ago against New York had they had Carey Price there. That series went 6 games. They got to the second round here against Tampa Bay where that series went 6 games, though it wasn't as close, I don't believe, as the series would indicate. You know, I think Tampa took their foot off the gas for games 4 and 5 because they sort of had the flexibility to do so. Montreal is definitely a playoff team going forward. The question is, how do they become a Stanley Cup contender? How do they become a Stanley Cup winner going forward when the size deficiency isn't one that's easily fixed by them?
Yeah, and Drew, the answer to that is not an easy one, but when you talk about the Montreal Canadiens, one thing that they have that many teams will struggle to have for many years is the best goaltender in the world. And that's why you're going to continue to see them build around, and you're going to see them build their team around P.K. Subban, Norris Trophy candidate, Norris Trophy winner. And, you know, they have the building blocks there. And Carey Price and P.K. Subban are, you know, still in the primes of their careers, I believe. Another issue for me, for the Montreal Canadiens, you know, you saw Nathan Beaulieu and Jacob Delarose have good seasons, and you know, Beaulieu had the injury there, and they had to go with Greg Patterson. But to me, because the Montreal Canadiens have been successful, they've been in the playoffs now for the last 3 years, they haven't had top picks, and they don't have grade A prospects coming through the system that are really going to push and for roster spots. Delarose, I mean, he's a good defensive forward. You know, he's got a bit of a scoring touch, but he's not going to be a top six forward unless things drastically change. I'm not saying that the guy can't play a top six role, but I'm saying he's not like a grade A prospect. Mm-hmm. And to me, the Montreal Canadiens don't have that in the system. They don't have guys, you know, you've had guys like Michael Bournival come in and players like this, and, you know, Beaulieu, he's, you know, kind of a projects to be, you know, a good physical defenseman. But the Montreal Canadiens are kind of suffer from the same. And, you know, I don't want to take anything away from their scouting staff. I mean, Brendan Gallagher was a fifth-round pick. Galchenyuk was a good first-round pick. So, I mean, they've had some good picks here. Just saying, they don't have maybe especially the top prospect system like the Winnipeg Jets have, and that's an issue too. So that's going to put more pressure on them to nail their draft picks coming up here.
Yeah, you make a very good point there. When you look at their prospects coming up, I mean, who do you have? You know, they drafted Nikita Scherbak first round last year, but they drafted him 26th overall. So, you know, what are you getting? You know, is he a, you know, top six guy? I don't know enough about him. I can't answer that question. But they don't have anybody banging on the door that's going to dramatically change their, you know, their top six forward group or their top nine forward group and you know, sort of change the makeup of the team as being skilled and fast, but maybe not skilled enough or not big enough and maybe not fast enough to really do significant damage come playoff time. And that's sort of, they're sort of between the rock and the hard place. They're not bad enough to not be a playoff team and not bad enough that they need to start, you know, tanking or anything along those lines, but they're not really good enough where they need to, you know, where the Stanley Cup, you know, they're right on the door of the Stanley Cup finals and winning the Stanley Cup. They're in that awkward middle stage where they need to acquire somebody, but don't necessarily have the resources and don't necessarily have the assets to go out and make that deal. You know, Lars Eller, a guy who's, you know, sort of probably plays a third line centerman role there, not thrilled with his role, but Lars Eller's not getting you that much in return that's going to make a big difference. You know, Galchenyuk, who they drafted third overall, and, you know, had 20 goals this year, 26 points playing on the wing, and they drafted him as a centerman, doesn't sound like he's eager to play center at any point. It doesn't sound like the Habs are eager to force him into a centerman's role. So they're sort of in the middle there where they're not, you're not sure what they are, you're not sure if they're coming or going, and where the future holds for the Montreal Canadiens. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Ben Raby. We're going to talk about the Washington Capitals with him. Ben is the Capital Radio Network studio host. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's the Washington Capitals Radio Network studio host, Ben Raby. Ben, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be with you. How are you?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Ben?
We're good. Off-season, we're getting settled in, you know. It's been an interesting 48 hours or so in these parts, but it was a terrific regular season, a great postseason run. Unfortunate in these parts that, of course, the Capitals didn't reach the conference final, but like I said, we're settling in slowly to off-season mode.
Absolutely. We've been in off-season mode for a few more weeks longer than you guys have been, obviously. But that Game 7 went to overtime. About all you can ask for from a Game 7, you know, unless you're a Capitals fan, in which the case the result was a little bit disappointing. You know, ultimately, it seems like you would describe it as a successful season in Washington, Barry Trotz's first as the Capitals head coach.
Yeah, it certainly was as far as adapting to a new system and sort of the changing of the culture a little bit in these parts with new management, new coaching staff, and a couple of new bodies brought in last offseason, most notably Matt Niskanen and Brooks Orpik on the back end. So it certainly was a little bit of a different looking Capitals team in some regards this year. But what I will say is as they head into the offseason, as far as whether it was a successful campaign or not, obviously when the players conduct their exit interviews as they did yesterday, there's the disappointment, it's fresh in their mind, blowing a 3-1 series lead in round two, unable to advance to the conference final when they were so close. There is disappointment in that regard, but a lot of optimism as well heading into the offseason and looking ahead to next season. And as good as the Capitals have been at times during the Alex Ovechkin era, and having covered the team for a few years myself in these parts, it was a different tone yesterday, that optimism going into the offseason. There really is a sense of direction. There's a sense of leadership, which starts with head coach Barry Trotz. And that hasn't necessarily been here in the past heading into offseasons. And I think there is a little bit the thought is that, you know, there is something to build off of certainly going into next season. And while, again, there is disappointment that they didn't finish the job this year, there is a sense that obviously there's unfinished business, as most teams will claim this time of year, but it is a little bit of a different sense in these parts than in years past.
Ben, you mentioned Alexander Ovechkin there briefly, and we have to bring up Alexander Ovechkin and the guarantee and all that. And I'm sure that you saw, maybe you didn't see it live, but you heard that Alexander Ovechkin got the goal for Russia, the second goal, and unfortunately it was at the expense of the Americans at the World Championships. But it was nice for Alexander Ovechkin, who's now joined the Russian team. It's already stacked with players like Malkin and Tarasenko, but must be nice for him to, you know, get a big goal there, and he's going to play in the finals, because obviously it didn't work out how Ovechkin, you know, guaranteed and said it would. And what were your thoughts, by the way, on the guarantee and basically the way Alexander Ovechkin played throughout the playoffs?
Yeah, as far as, and I put it in air quotes, his guarantee. I mean, he said that they're going to go into Game 7 and they're going to win the game. And I think if you had asked, you know, most players in that, all players in the dressing room, they would have said the same thing. So I think with 2 days, you know, keep in mind, there were 2 days between Game 6 and 7. You know how it works as far as headline writers, sports talk radio. With 2 days off between games, that's going to have a life. And it did, his so-called guarantee. You know, I referenced it, a prediction. You know, if you want to word it that way, it's a little bit lighter than a guarantee. But either way, his play in Game 7 was certainly there. He was the lone goal scorer for the Capitals in Game 7. And Alex Ovechkin had a terrific Game 7 for the Capitals the other night. As far as his play in the postseason, you know, he had a couple of games in the second round series where he was contained to an extent from Dan Girardi and Ryan McDonough, one of the top shutdown pairs in the league, and they have had their playoff history, the Capitals and the Rangers, and it seems every spring he runs into Dan Girardi and Ryan McDonough, who have a history of limiting him, and again, they did to an extent in this series as well, but overall, as a whole, if you look at the play in the postseason of Alex Ovechkin, it's not the reason the Capitals were unable to advance past round two. There are other players on the team, other leaders, other veterans who, to a man, say they could have done more, they should have been better, but he's the face of the franchise. It will, to an extent, fall on Alex Ovechkin, but I think a number of his teammates, you know, names that come to mind, Troy Brouwer, 21 goals during the regular season, was held without a goal in 14 playoff games. Marcus Johansson was a 20-goal scorer during the regular season. He went the final 13 games of the postseason without a goal. Nicholas Backstrom, Alex Ovechkin's running mate all these years, he was limited to just 2 assists in the final 11 games of the postseason. Mike Green ended the postseason with an 11-game scoreless drought. So the point I'm getting at is maybe the fingers get pointed to Alex Ovechkin because of the weight he carries as the captain and the face of this franchise. You can look around at Capitals room, and for a team to come so close to advancing to the conference finals, I don't think you could point the finger at number 8.
Our guest is Ben Raby. Ben is the Washington Capitals Radio Network studio host, discussing the season that was for the Washington Capitals, obviously falling just short in overtime of Game 7 against the New York Rangers. Ben, you mentioned Mike Green, a longtime Washington Capitals player, of course, going to be an unrestricted free agent at season's end. Had probably one of his best years, really, since his heydays in the 2009-2010 time period. He had 45 points this year during the regular season. What do the Capitals do with Mike Green this offseason in terms of trying to sign him to a new deal? They spent big money last offseason to bring in Matt Niskanen and Brooks Orpik. How do they, you know, sort of balance the need to bring back Mike Green with having so much money already locked up on the back end?
And I think that's the key thing. I think the long-term deals they signed to Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen, I mean, between them, their long-term deals, you know, Matt Niskanen 7 years, Brooks Orpik 5 years. You also have signed to long-term deals John Carlson and, to a lesser extent, Carl Alsner as well. There's a lot of money invested on the Washington Capitals' back end, and for that reason, it might be difficult to bring back Mike Green. There's loyalty there. It's the only organization he's known, a 2004 first-round pick, the longest-tenured defenseman in the organization right now. It would have to be a hefty hometown discount for Mike Green to remain with the Capitals. And I imagine as he really tests unrestricted free agency for the first time in his career, you know, a right-handed, puck-moving defenseman with offensive potential that Mike Green has, I'm sure he'll get a few phone calls and offers throughout the league should he reach July 1st, which I would anticipate he may very well, because, again, the limitations the Capitals have as far as salary cap restrictions. And that said, if Mike Green hits the open market, you know, folks recall going back 5-6 years ago, a 31-goal season, a 76-point season, a couple of Norris Trophy nominees, I think that productivity from Mike Green might be in the rearview mirror, but he did have a solid year this year. You mentioned 45 points. He played north of 70 games for the first time in a few years. He stayed healthy, and he really excelled as a third-pairing defenseman. I think he's above that, but on this roster, on the Capitals, he was really their fifth defenseman on the depth chart. He was put in some favorable situations, you know, not necessarily eating up big minutes, but going up against third and fourth lines, and he excelled in that. And again, also a power play quarterback for the Capitals and wherever he might wind up in the future. So, you know, it would be a loss for the Capitals, certainly, to lose Mike Green, and a guy who heads into a contract year now, or the off season of a contract year, I should say, in a good spot, having just completed a successful year, Mike Green.
Ben, we've got one last question for you here. We know you got to get on with your Saturday afternoon here. You know, the Capitals, as I'm sure you're aware, have a few other UFAs. Joel Ward's the big one out there, but you've also got Curtis Glencross, Jay Beagle, who I think you'd agree was excellent in this, yeah, these playoffs, really underrated player. But I guess, what are the chances those three players come back, and specifically Joel Ward, who, again, had a great postseason for the Washington Capitals?
And you know what? You could throw in Winkler, Manitoba, Eric Fair into that conversation as well. Now, the Capitals have six unrestricted free agents coming up, and really it's Joel Ward, Jay Beagle, Eric Fair, and Mike Green who sort of made up part of the core of this team for some time. Joel Ward just completed his fourth year with the Capitals. He is approaching 35 years of age. I would think this is the last sort of opportunity for him to cash in. Again, a big-time player, a playoff performer, a guy who also has stayed healthy over the past years, just completed his second straight 82-game season, but he's shown an ability to lift his game come postseason play, and that's not to take away from his regular season either. He had 19 goals this season, finished fourth on the Capitals in that capacity. It might be tough to keep him. I mean, everything comes down to salary cap and really how many years. I could see in Joel Ward's case, again, if he approaches 35 years of age, it could come down to a team out there, not unlike what the Capitals did last year with Brooks Orpik. They offered him that fifth year. They offered him an extra year, one more year than most teams were willing to do. Joel Ward approaching 35, I could see it come down to that. I could see a team offering a third year when most teams are offering two, or a team offering a fourth year when most teams are offering three. It could come down to that. He does have a loyalty to this team. He has a loyalty to Barry Trotz going back this time in Nashville. He's enjoyed it here. He said yesterday there's some unfinished business. But again, you hit free agency July 1st, and the phone calls start pouring in. It'll be interesting to see. That would be a significant loss for the Capitals. And as you mentioned, Jay Beagle, Eric Fair, I mean, there's some secondary key cog pieces as well that would be tough to lose. But it's hard to keep them all, so we'll see how it plays out.
In any event, it ought to be an interesting offseason for the Washington Capitals and general manager Brian McClellan. Ben Raby is the Washington Capitals Radio Network studio host. Ben, appreciate your time this afternoon, and we'll do it again real soon.
Likewise, appreciate it, fellas. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ben. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290.
All I need is one mic. I mean, we're very happy. We're pleased the way he performed for us. He played some big minutes. I've watched him closely. I know his strength, and I think he fits perfect with our team. And obviously, he will be a priority to bring back in Montreal.
You have to make some changes elsewhere to make room for him. Or
as we speak, we don't really know where the cap's going to be. Right. You know, it's always hard because you don't know until the end of June. But we'll do our best to keep him in Montreal if he wants to be here, and I think he does.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
Drew.
Hi. Nice to hear from you guys again. Got to give a shout-out to engineer extraordinaire Lauren Anderson coming in, fixing the microphone so we can hear from Richie and Ezzy again.
We have life again.
We have three microphones.
You were talking way too much.
I know.
It was terrible.
Really, it was awful. Yeah. I know.
People were complaining.
I don't blame them. That was Montreal Canadiens general manager Marc Bergevin talking about unrestricted free agent defenseman Jeff Petrie. He's going to be the first UFA up on the block as we reintroduce the UFA of the week segment here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I'd say, as we said during break, but as we said during some of the segments when you couldn't hear us, I mean, Jeff Petrie is a top UFA. Ooh, it's going to be a long summer.
I'll tell you what, he made himself a lot of money you know, coming over from Edmonton at the trade deadline. I think, what did Montreal trade for him? A second-round pick?
Yes.
So, you know, a second-round pick, Jeff Petrie played, certainly played better than a second-round pick would during the playoffs. You know, he had 7 points in 19 regular season games, averaging a little over 22 minutes time on ice, and then 3 points in 12 games, again, a little more than 22 minutes. You know, Jeff Petrie's probably going to cash in, largely because it is a depressed market when it comes to UFAs this offseason.
Yeah, and, you know, Jeff Petrie is, you know, Richie's joking around here, but, you know, Jeff Petrie on a good team, he's not a top four defenseman. On the Chicago Blackhawks, is he a top four defenseman? Or St. Louis Blues, is he a top four defenseman, Rich?
If you look at, is he better than Keith Seabrook, Chalmerson, for sure not. Odia, they're different. Depends on what side you want. St. Louis is not better than...
If he is, he's a four, four-and-a-half defenseman, right?
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
Again, Jeff Petrie, you mentioned he spent, most of his career 5 years with the Edmonton Oilers, and, comes over to Montreal, and he was pretty good in the playoffs. To me, Jeff Petrie, he's a big guy. He can be physical, but he's not, he's not a punishing defense. Like, you talk about Brooks Orpik. I mean, Brooks Orpik for the Washington Capitals was fantastic. And so was Matt Niskanen, too. But you're talking about Brooks Orpik. He's got the Stanley Cup with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jeff Petrie's never had more than 25 points in a season. So we're not talking about Mike Green here. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're talking about the biggest UFA defenseman on the market, Mike Green, to me, is going to be the most sought after. Team like Detroit, you always hear they want offensive defenseman like Mike Green. I think, a lot of teams will want Mike Green. But Jeff Petrie, what you're going to get with him. He's solid. He's pretty responsible. And you can't really look at his plus-minus numbers because he was on one of the worst teams when he was with the Edmonton Oilers. So I think, Richie's better at this than I am, but, you'd have to think that a guy like Jeff Petrie, who on a middling team or a bottom team, a team that didn't make the playoffs, you'd have to think he could be a top four defenseman, Drew. So you'd have to think he's going to get in the $4 million a year range.
I think the breakdown's fair. I think, if you have a top team, Drew, you want him in your, top in your second pairing and really rely on him. Depends who he's playing with. Jake Muzzin's a good player, but he plays beside Drew Doughty and looks amazing, right? I mean, that's kind of how it works in terms of who you play with. But, Jeff Petrie, he moves pretty well. Skating-wise, as you mentioned, his size, not a bad size. Physical at times. I think it was Petrie who knocked Perreault through the boards for that injury on the shoulder there, if I recall correctly. As physical.
That might have been, was that Beaulieu? I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah, I thought it was Edmonton-Winnipeg game.
I thought you were talking, sorry, yeah. When he was on Edmonton, yeah. Sorry.
So in terms of physicality, I personally think Petrie could be more physical, could engage more physically. He moves the puck pretty well on a first pass. Offensively at times, I don't love his decision-making. I mean, he's all right. He's a solid player. Yeah, he can play in your top four of a team that's not terrific, which the Montreal Canadiens I don't think are terrific. I think they're in that second level. You can play on top four on a good team, depending on a really good team, depending on who his partner is. Like, I wouldn't want him to be, put it to you this way. If he's on your, it's easier to understand this way. If he's on your second pairing, he can't be the best of those two defensemen.
He's got to be your number four guy if he's in your top four, is what you're saying.
But it's got to be a pretty big, to me, you have to have a pretty big gap. It's
one,
not like,
two, three are pretty high, and then there's a gap, and then there's Jeff Petrie.
Yes.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to, take anything away from Jeff Petrie, because he's definitely an NHL defenseman. I have questions if he could even, Richie and I are disagreeing, politely on this. I have questions if he could be a top four defenseman on a good team. To me, a team, you guys are going to get on me here, but a team that might put an offer on Jeff Petrie is the Devils. He's a right shot defenseman.
At least you know that we're going to get on you for that suggestion.
Devils are a rebuilding team. I think Michael Frolik could be an option for the New Jersey Devils as well. There's the connections there with Eliáš, Czech Republic. Jeff Petrie, right
shot
defenseman.
Not over 35, though.
Yeah, exactly. No, but Marek Zidlicky was traded to the Detroit Red Wings. On the right side, you've got Adam Larson there. You've got Damon Severson there. To me, a Jeff Petrie on a rebuilding team, sure, they've got Andy Green, but Bryce Salvador, his career might be over, unfortunately, from Brandon, of course. But a guy like Jeff Petrie, to me, on the Devils would be a good fit.
Look at the Detroit.
Just for example, I'm just spitballing.
His dad pitched for the Detroit Tigers. He went to Michigan State. Detroit's losing Zidlicky, right-handed shot guy, who they've been looking at. He fits into their game plan, and that he can skate. He can move the puck out of his own zone pretty well. He'll be insulated by the players that he plays with, although I don't love their defense. I could certainly see Detroit being maybe even the favorite for his services.
Yeah, and especially because, you know, we mentioned Mike Green was an option there. Yeah. He's offensive-minded. Detroit Red Wings are all about being on the attack. They obviously want a defensively responsible player as well. But you're right, he does fit in there.
We'll get into the Mike Green thing. I mean, Mike Green was terrific in the role that he played this year, and that was a role behind Matt Niskanen, behind John Carlson, and he wasn't trusted against the top six players most often on the other team.
Yep.
He was able to play power play and able to play in that role. He excelled, and he's going to get top four money, but he's going to then be thrust back into the spotlight of having to defend. And I don't know if he can. I don't think he can do that, frankly, at a high level. So I don't know what team. You know, I at the same time, if I'm the Colorado Avalanche and I have Tyson Barrie and I have who's a great offensive player, and I have Eric Johnson, and I want to get better on the back end, I don't care if he can't defend as much as he can get the puck out of his own zone and move the puck on the power play, and we can use him and Barrie. You know, Green and Barrie could quarterback the power play, or you know, even though they're both right-handed truck guys, or he'll play the second unit and I'll take pressure off Eric Johnson. I mean, there is. Defensemen who can shoot the puck on the right side and move the puck are going to get money.
Yeah,
it's like lefty pitchers in baseball going to get cash.
And Richie, we just mentioned three teams there: Colorado Avalanche, Detroit Red Wings, New Jersey Devils. We haven't planned this out. We haven't gone through all 30 teams, or I guess, you know, we're not counting the Montreal Canadiens, which is an option there for him to resign.
And Mark Bergevin, very effusive and is praiseable, wanting to bring back Jeff Petrie, going and saying that Petrie himself is interested in coming back because, of course, what's he going to say?
And why is that? It's for the reasons that Richie just said. He's, as we know, defensemen develop a little bit later. He's 27 years old. Montreal Canadiens, they've said Sergei Gonchar is not coming back. I mean, by the way, great career for Sergei Gonchar. I mean, the guy, one of the best Russian defensemen of all time. Not rushing, like R-U-S-H, like from Russia.
Thank you. Rushing, right? And Russian.
Yeah,
how about that?
I mean,
they are spelled
great,
and pronounced
great
differently.
Great power play guy, and he was great for years with the Capitals and Penguins and all that. You know, so great for him, but he's not coming back. You look at the Montreal Canadiens, you got some youngsters there. Bolia being a guy that, you know, they can't thrust him right in there, and you're always going to have Subban and Markov there. But, you know, Rich, you make a good point. I mean, some of these teams that really struggled this year, that's a key. You got to be able to move the puck. You can't win if you're always in your own zone. Jeff Petrie is a good skater. He's a mobile defenseman.
I mean,
so even though he might not be, he's not in the same class as a top defenseman. He's not going to be a number one or number two defenseman, but he still is an upgrade. You know, we're talking to Colorado. I mean, they could definitely use him.
I had problems also with Jeff Petrie. Wouldn't always bring 100% effort every night when I watched him in Edmonton.
I
can blame him, because even if you're getting paid that much money, you should be bringing maximum effort, even if it's on a bad team and he was afforded a good opportunity to play a lot. So in terms of Montreal, I didn't watch him as closely as I did in Edmonton, so I can't really speak to that. But that was a concern for me. And in terms of giving a guy a lot of money, you know, it depends on the team you play on the role, right? Edmonton's a youthful team with no direction at the time and no real leadership. No leadership, really. And you look at situation he goes into Montreal, they don't have a captain, but they have a structure in place, and he fits, I think, better in, and you know, it's truthfully, he fits better in not only talent wise but leadership wise
speaks to Detroit, where you can sort of just drop in and be a guy, just a player on the roster, as opposed to anybody who's looked upon in a leadership role. He might fit in very well with the Detroit Red Wings along those lines.
Well, Drew, and I know we're going to get into some more of the UFAs here. I imagine, like, Joel Ward and Mike Green, for example,
as the weeks go on.
Those are two big guys, and there's St. Louis, and you know, I've talked a lot about Matt Bolesky. I don't see Bolesky not coming back for Anaheim. Maybe Richie disagrees with that, but I think they're really high on him, and he's been really good in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about Jeff Petrie, you're talking about a second-round pick, and you're talking about a guy, as we mentioned, he's not in the same type of category as Mike Green's offensive totals. But the new norm in the NHL is if you have a above-average defenseman who's got that mobility and some offensive instincts and talent, you're going to get $4 million because there's a lack of them in the NHL. And that to me, mm-hmm. that's why Jeff Petrie is highly sought after, because – you know, whether or not he plays in your top pair or second pair or third pair, most likely the second or third pair, and he's going to play those second and third line minutes for a defenseman, teams want him. And Montreal Canadiens, I mean, you take Jeff Petrie out of that lineup, they would have struggled. But for me, if you're talking about Jeff Petrie, is he even as good as the top four defensemen on the Winnipeg Jets? I don't think so.
Well, I don't think he is either, but that's not, so the Jets, that's one less team that's obviously going to be in the running.
Yeah, and
but,
the Jets don't need more defensemen.
But. But if you're talking about if the Montreal Canadiens are interested and you're speculating maybe Detroit would be interested in New Jersey, well, all of a sudden you got three teams bidding for a guy who's certainly not at the end of his career and probably not likely to slow down. He's got, he's 27 years old, so he's probably in the market for a 5-6 year deal. And given the way these general managers...
Sorry to cut you off, Drew, there. I have a mic now, so I can do that. But, you know, the... see, to me, that would be a mistake. Again, and no offense to Jeff Petrie, but because you can only sign other players to seven-year contracts, Rich, to me, like, if you give Jeff Petrie
if
a five- or six-year deal...
If Jeff Petrie gets a seven-year contract, cancel the show.
No, but no, even...
Cancel the show, not the league. Cancel the show.
I think even six or even five. I think four max. You sign him to more than 4 years, Rich? If you're a GM of an NHL team, do you sign him to more than 4 years?
No.
Well,
and Rich is smarter than I am.
Yes, but is it, unfortunately, Richard's not smarter than the general managers, and there are, you know, there's a lot of general managers that are willing to make bad mistakes and, you know, get a, you know, a nice, what they think is a good signing under their belt, but, you know, we've seen so much foolish cash thrown around in this NHL. 27 years old, not old.
You can't throw it around like you used to, though, Drew. You got to be more careful.
Yeah,
I mean,
but these guys though. I agree with you, but they do. We see it every offseason.
The cap is going to make teams more cautious, though, because Mark Bergevin, you heard in the lead in there, talk about he's not sure what it's going to be. Larry Brooks seems to think it's going to be 69 or 70, which is essentially the same as it was last year, right?
So, yeah, a little bit down even or something. What was it, 71 this year?
Yeah, it's close. It's, so, I mean, if that lack of room is going to make spending more difficult, then it's going to... restrict the market for these UFAs.
Yeah, okay, so let's sum it up. What are you giving Jeff Petrie if you're a general manager?
What am I giving and what he's getting are two different things. I'm not giving Jeff Petrie more than 3 years, $4 million a year. He'll probably get a 5-year deal for 4.5 per year or even 5.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, I can't beat what Richie said. And so I think that, and that speaks to the lack of quality free agents at the high end on the free agent market, mm-hmm. and the fact that, you know, puck rushing defensemen are highly sought after, mm-hmm. and he does have that. He doesn't have the offensive skills that a guy like a Mike Green has, but I think a lot of teams will want him. And again, I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I just don't think, you know, if you're talking about like last year, if you think he's going to be this year's Brooks Orpik or Matt Niskanen, I just don't think he's quite in that level.
I'm trying to take $5 to $10 million away from him.
Personally, very mean of you, because they're just echoing whatever you say on the show, of course. Let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Babcock, we're going to talk about the latest news on that front. His one-on-one interview, him and Ken Holland sat down with Darren Dreger yesterday.
One-on-two.
Which is 1 + 2 = 3, which is the number of mics we now have on the program.
And less than the number of teams that apparently expressed interest in him aside from Detroit.
Which is surprising. We'll talk about it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.